This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Happy Wednesday to you. Happy cherry cheesecake day to you. I almost said cherry cheesesteak, and that's an entirely different innovation. And not a good one, I don't think.
That sounds nasty.
I'll try it, though. I'm going to be honest. I would try it at least once. I'm not going to lie. All through that crosstalk, yeah. I was thinking milkshake spear. And I was like, how do I make this a thing? I was like, that's not good. It's not good. Just leave that alone.
All through that crosstalk, I was thinking, look at Figgy channeling C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Look at Figgy.
Oh, because he's wearing a hat?
Oh, the bucket hat?
It's a good bucket hat. It's a good bucket hat.
You need
it's,
to put it real high and put a ribbon around it like C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Shout out to C.J. Gardner-Johnson who brought all the entertainment value that you would expect of a person of his stature to the podium yesterday. We'll hear from him today. And we'll get you ready for various things, right? We are one sleep away from the draft, the 2025 NFL draft. We are zero sleeps away, unless you need to get a nap in or something, from game two of NBA first round action, Rockets Warriors. And let's start this up. In fact, first and foremost, myself and Figgy getting in the vibes of I don't think we're going to be in the arena tonight. However, what we are doing is we are wearing the shirt.
I'm actually kind of glad I forgot now, because then we would have looked really weird with all three of us.
No, we would have looked like we are all pulling in the right direction.
We would have looked like a damn family.
That's right. What like. You out here being different.
You know what I call you two? No, I'm not going to say that.
Don't do that. But 713-572-4610 is the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. That's right. Also, appreciation of the Mokarem Injury Lawyers for the live streams, both on YouTube and Twitch. My bad. That's on me. Where you can get involved with the program. Let's go ahead and ask our questions headed into game two. What are the questions that you have for game two, particularly as the Rockets hope to even up the series 1-1 before they make the trip to San Francisco?
All right, so we can start with the big picture here and then get into some more of the minutiae or smaller things.
I want to start with minutiae.
You want to start with minutiae?
No, I'm just playing.
We can do that, but the big picture.
People don't want to hear the minutiae.
I mean, it's not a complicated question for me. The biggest story of tonight's game.
Where the offense at?
That's maybe even smaller. Who's going to step up? Who's going to score 30?
Who's going to step up?
Who's going to put 30 on them? 28.
From the Rockets team?
Yes.
Who's most likely to do that? Is that where we're starting?
To me, that's the biggest question. You have to – you know, one thing we've seen, and the playoffs have just really started, you know, obviously, but we've seen in every game one of the things that we mentioned last week, like a star doing star things. You've got to have that guy. We saw it with Steph and Jimmy Butler, mostly Steph, but we saw it in, you know, Kawhi has done it. Well, you know, Luka has done it. I mean, you've got to have a guy step up and make the other team pay with a big night.
So, well, you're talking about those, and I feel like that's probably more the guys that you expect to be relatively consistently in the 20 to 30 range.
But the Rockets need a guy to do that. They didn't have anybody that could really put the pressure,
right,
make them make adjustments, make them change their defensive scheme. The trickle down is incredible if you have one dude that is just on.
Yeah, but I think
this ain't the off season yet.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I don't want to go to that conversation. That is not a conversation we need to have yet. It's a conversation that we've probably already had too much in this particular time period. But I mean, I think, is it probably fair to say that you would, instead of like one guy drop a 35 of them things, you probably need a couple guys dropping 22, right? Like, who are those guys that are capable and available to do that? From the 281 on the text line already coming in, y'all are going to laugh at me. I don't think so. I don't think I'm gonna in that space to laugh. Well, Lopez did just chuckle there.
I laughed at the question.
Fair enough. They said, I believe that tonight Jalen, Jabari, and Amen are going to show up and show out. That's just the way I feel, and we'll even the series. How do you feel about those three as potentials in here when you talk about Jalen Green, mm-hmm. who obviously is going to have the ball in his hands a decent amount because that's just kind of the way that you've found success of late. Jabari Smith Jr., who is a guy that we looked at as good in the relatively limited offensive mm-hmm. role that he had, and we have questions about how much will that role be expanded. And then Amen Thompson, who admittedly not nearly to the level as of Jalen Green and probably Fred VanVleet, but was a disappointment in game one, at the very least offensively, where he just did not impact the game very much there. And defensively, I don't know how much you can blame him for the fact that Steph Curry can go supernova in some ways.
I think, you know, look, the Rockets can win like that. You know, they've won like that. They've been able to just, you know, beat you in several different ways with different guys. You know, we've had the discussion about who's going to have the ball at the end, and it's two or three different guys. I still want to see somebody go off. I think that is what's going to affect Steve Kerr and the defense and how they play you all the way. Now, Jalen Green would be the obvious choice. Şengün would be the second most obvious choice. Those guys, one of those two guys has to be supernova. They have to.
I don't even know if that's a fair thing from them to be like supernova, because if you're waiting for one of them to just be supernova, I do wonder, are you going to get to a place where you're waiting to the point where mm-hmm. you end up in the offseason, right?
Sure.
To say it as nicely as I possibly
sure.
can. Now, to a point and kind of getting closer to that, one of the questions I have for this game is, does Ime Udoka change his rotation? Ime had been, regular season and the postseason are different. I want to acknowledge that up front. But in the regular season, Ime had been willing to play 9, 10 players deep and maybe more at times, depending on the circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
Does that shift? Does he shift the way that his rotation operates? Does he maybe even add someone to the rotation like folks were clamoring for, and maybe seeing a little Reed Shepard, seeing a little Cam Whitmore, who I thought posited, and Aaron Holiday, because he said that he is not tied to the mm-hmm. 8-man rotation that you saw in game one. But I don't know how often you typically see a rotation expanded in the postseason once it's kind of tightened down.
Yeah, look, that's on my list. What's the lineup going to be? How is the lineup going to expand? Because I feel like it does. I feel like he gave us a hint, as you just mentioned, that this lineup is going to expand. I just have that gut feeling about, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, as B. Scott was saying yesterday, of a Reed Shepard. That would be my first.
Well, I think he was more an advocate for Cam Whitmore.
Or Cam Whitmore.
Especially because he can get in that place. What he said is eight to ten minutes.
Not necessarily a big, you know, dose, but something to loosen up the defense, something to knock down the threes, something to stretch them out a little bit. I think one of those two guys would be the most likely. So how is the lineup? That's on my list. Another one on my list that I think is, you know, damn near as important as, you know, somebody going off is who's getting you into the offense. You know, how are you going to get into your offense? I said it the other day that they have a lot of guys that can score, but they don't have an effective offense. They need an effective offense, and how are you going to get there is my other point.
It still feels like I don't necessarily, and maybe you could just say, damn, Reggie, you were not imaginative in this moment. That probably is fair if you want to levy that against me. But I still think that it's probably you go to Alperin in the middle of the floor like you had. He had a level of success mm-hmm. doing that. And you still trust that, hey, man, we're going to have Jalen Green in some of these pick and rolls or dribble handoffs.
Yeah.
And then also we're going to go and hunt. And I think that leads me, sorry to jump off of the question that you've had here, mm-hmm. because I think that I don't know that I have a great answer outside of, hey, I think you largely have mm-hmm. seen it. How much do you then also, or how good can you be in hunting Steph? And how much better is it? Because it just needs to be better. I don't know that you can allow Steph Curry to get away with the instances where you put him against a good perimeter player mm-hmm. and they win the possession, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's a step back three or a long shot, as opposed to getting to the rim and forcing the issue against the smallest and probably least good defender that the Golden State Warriors are going to have on the floor for the most part.
No, I agree, actually. I think that's something that the last 3 days, but definitely the last 2 days, I can guarantee you the Rockets have been looking for ways to do that exactly that. They've showed that one play that we all talked about, you know, how do you defend him and then how do you have him defending you and then take a step back three? They probably showed that in the film room multiple times. But I do agree with you on that. The other thing that is more of a smaller thing that is very, very important to me is you have to, it's not even a question, I guess, but you have to have that kind of rebounding again. Like that rebounding is what kept you in the game. You would have been run out of the gym if you hadn't been, you know, putbacks and rebounds and defensive rebounds. Right. And so you would have been run out of the gym, I'm sorry to say. But you have to – Steven Adams has to have another game like he did, and you have to have more guys. You have to be able to out-rebound the Warriors, because that is the one place when you start doing the checkbox thing, check it over here, check it over there. I think everybody would say the Rockets have a rebounding advantage. They have to capitalize.
And one of the encouraging things about that for me is that Steven Adams – most every time that you get him out there this season, basically is that. Like, that was not, oh, man, Steven Adams put up one of those.
No, he's
you
been
know,
the most consistent.
In the postseason, you have the games where a podium game is what I like to call it. Mm-hmm. Like, a player who maybe is a certain level of role player kind of seems to play outside of his role for a night to give you an opportunity to steal a game or what have you that maybe you probably shouldn't have won. Or what Steven Adams, that game, that was more of what you typically expect is him eating glass and like being dominant down the floor. It's one of the reasons why he led the damn league in offensive rebounding percentage, right? It was because he has that level of game to him. I think the question that you ask is, can you expand his minutes beyond 20?
Yeah.
Because he got 20 minutes in that first game, and all of those minutes were great. And there were some times late in the second half where you were like, can we get Steven Adams back out here? Because it felt like that was a useful time for him on the floor. Like, and if you can expand that, to what level? Can you add 5 more minutes? Can he play 25 minutes knowing that you're not going to play again until Saturday, right? Is that something where you know that you have a little bit of time, and can we push, ring a little bit more out of a guy who's not like crazy old? He's like 31, but you know, he has injury issues and he has some of those things. Yeah. So I do wonder, is that something where you can get some more run out of that? And does that ultimately give you a little bit more, because your offense oftentimes is so much predicated on second and third chance opportunity.
And he hasn't been bad in terms of either passing the ball or finishing on offense either. I think you need to run him until the wheels fall off. And I think he would tell you that. Run him until the wheels fall off, because he's such an influence, a plus player, if you will. Last thing that I had on my list is you have to start fast. You have to start fast. We know these games go in ebbs and flows. Yeah. We know people make a run, but you're down 1-0 at home, man. You've got to jump out on these cats. You've got to jump out with a 10-point lead going into the second quarter, something along those lines, 8-point, 10-point control, and just put that momentum, on your side. But also,
I don't accept your apology.
But just the confidence and have them on their heels a little bit.
I mean, that's in any basketball game, but particularly in one like this. Like, if you can apply some pressure and maybe get the Warriors out of necessarily their style.
Comfort zone, yeah.
There's a couple of things that I'm thinking. One of them comes in on the YouTube page. I think Jabari should start tonight, Jeremy says. Do you kind of agree with that sentiment?
What's that?
Jabari Smith Jr. starting, or at least getting more burn. Because that was a question that was asked to Ime after game one. Is like, do you have any consideration for starting Jabari Smith Jr. or at least giving him a larger role, or basically trying to get him on the floor more?
I just want the rotation to be able to be expanded and find the hot hand.
Okay.
Like whether it's Reed, Shepard, or Cam Whitmore, or Jabari, whomever it is, I think you need to be more than 8 deep. You need to go more than 8 deep, especially when you're struggling offensively.
One of the questions that I have, and somewhat hopeful thinking I understand, is what happens if you do knock down shots? Because there was a lack of shot making in game one, and that was very evident, obviously, from certain people, especially Fred VanVleet. And one of the reasons why I did not entirely jump out the gym on his performance, it was not a good one by any means, but he was getting good looks. They just weren't going for him. Yeah. And I know some of these other guys, you're going to need to have knockdown shots as well to a much higher degree than they did. But, I mean, Fred in particular having so many of those looks, maybe, Tari missing his 4, Jalen Green missing his 4, those didn't help. But, like, what happens if you knock down a few of these shots? What can you shift? Like, what does it look like? Does this then give energy to your offense? But then also, does that at all shift the way, or how many shots do you have to knock down to shift the way that the Golden State Warriors play you defensively? Can you force them to unshrink the floor, to not pack the paint? And then does that allow you to really get busy in a different way?
Yeah, that's basically, I think one of the biggest keys, if not the biggest key. I said you have to have one guy go off, because for the same reason. If one guy goes off, it changes the effect, the way they defend, et cetera, et cetera. But if you get 2 or 3 guys knocking down 3-point shots, think about how much zone they ran. You know, the zone all of a sudden becomes something they put in their back pocket a little bit.
That's interesting. I had not really considered from that perspective, but if they do, if you can just, even
get
if they're
out
still
of the zone,
even if they're still trying to
Alperen Şengün too.
Right, exactly. That's exactly where I wanted to go. I think we're in a mind meld at this point. Even if you don't get them to stop digging in, right, where you have guys sagging off of their guys in the perimeter a little bit to get in. Even if you just force them back into a man situation where you don't have a zone, where when Alperen has the ball, he's not looking at two guys that can really come at him at, with depending on what move. If he can get back to that one-on-one, he was cooking Draymond Green. And he has cooked Draymond Green when he has the opportunity to go one up against him, or at least he has won more than he has lost for the most part. If you can at least force them into man coverage as opposed to being in zone, you might be able to get yourself enough offense to get over that, what, 95-point barrier, and not to say that it's absolutely going to be exactly that number again, but get over that barrier to make you get you a win and get you back to 1-1 as you head out of Houston.
The best thing about getting them out of the zone, outside of knocking down some threes, which will do it, is a lot of times when they were getting the entry pass into Alperen Şengün against the zone, there was already two defenders there because it's a zone. There's one in front, one in back, all right? If you're in man, there's only one defender there, and they have to come at you. And that gives him more room to move and kick out or take it to the rack.
Yeah, super excited for what this game looks like. This is going to be an important basketball game to try and get a victory. And I guess another question is how settled have the nerves become after a game?
Yeah, big one. That's a very good one.
Right.
Because I said it and I still stand by it. They look like a team that had never been in this environment in the past. And Jalen Green looked like a guy. I used the word wilted. Maybe that's a little harsh, but I think he did. That needs to change.
Yeah, super excited. Yeah. Excited for a liftoff,
as
myself and Figgy's shirt say. Unfortunately, Lopez's shirt says Columbia.
Mine says Columbia.
That's right. But super excited for this game to start. 8:30 on TNT and Space City Home Network. If you're watching along, and you should be, with the Rockets in the first round. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we are one day away from the NFL draft. And scuttlebutt, people are dropping nuggets as to what's happening, including... Seems like the Nick Caserio trade-up noise is getting really big. Let's dig into that. Yeah. Happy Wednesday to you. Joel on the Twitch chat, the Mokarem Injury Lawyers live streams, appreciation to them. On the Twitch chat, Joel was like, it's a wet Wednesday. And I'm like, I don't know how comfortable I feel calling it that. However, it is wet outside.
That's so a word you just can't even say
stay
anymore.
Dry. What, wet?
Yeah, you can't even say it.
Nah,
anymore.
You can say the word wet. You just got to be careful with the context. I think I'm still good saying
also
that.
Also how you say it.
Yeah, nah, people mind going together when you say the word wet.
Yeah. Yeah, especially how you say it.
Yep.
Like you go, you know.
It's crazy how we could corrupt a word that is just fine, like moist. I know a lot of people are mad at me right
another
now.
One.
It's, ain't nothing wrong with the word. It is a normal word. Y'all done corrupt it for no reason.
Did you see this video of this guy in church singing the song?
Oh, yes. I remember that. He said, I don't want to say that. I don't want you to be able to pull
it. He was saying it in church.
No, I know he was saying it on church, but I was going to say what he said, and I don't need y'all, like, look. I don't need y'all finding that, having that audio on me.
I might play it one day.
It's bad enough. It's bad enough y'all got me probably doing up-downs. Whenever the next time is, I jump off sides on this. So what's popping intro? All right. Let's talk a little bit about some of the draft scuttlebutt. We are less than, 48 hours for sure.
We're a day away with 30 something hours?
Something like that. Yeah, I was going to do the math, and I realized I don't want to do that real quick. Somebody on the text line yesterday was telling me, hey, brush up on that math. And you're probably right. Mm-hmm. I do need to be cleaner with that. But we're one sleep away at the very least from NFL draft time, and we're getting a lot of scuttlebutt, a lot of news being dumped.
Another good word, by the way.
Scuttlebutt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I keep saying it, and it doesn't help that also Sean has been saying it as well, so it's pinging around in my brain. But we're getting a lot of kind of news and intel as the news breakers and the folks who work on the insider space. They've been working all through the draft season, and this is the time, like, this is the postseason for them, man. Like, go ahead and put up or shut up at this time, because none of that news is useful by the time you get next couple of days. But once you get past it, all that news coming up before it doesn't really do much for you. So this is the time to get it out there and put it on the table. And in that way, it seems like when it comes to the early portions of the draft, a lot of people seemingly are wanting to trade back.
Mm-hmm.
And they're finding that maybe there aren't a lot of people that want to trade up. Except...
Yeah.
The Houston Texans, as a number of various insiders, I know Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, Diana Russini, Albert Breer have all kind of spoken to this, but specifically I could point to like Fowler, or sorry, I didn't want to go to Fowler here. I wanted to go to Breer here, where Breer is continuing to say that that the Texans are really thumbing around on looking to address the position of offensive line in the first round and maybe even moving up in order to do that, right? He said Breer says that the Texans have been sniffing around on a trade up. It's no secret that the Texans need offensive line help, and he'd expect the Texans to target strong character players as they continue to remake that room. Now, he also goes further to kind of talk about this in a little bit of detail, saying that the Texans have two teams in front of them that really could take an offensive lineman in a strong way when it comes to the Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings. And so I think that there's kind of thoughts that your Armon Membu, your Will Campbell, the guys that I think people are looking at as the very top of the offensive tackle space, and then even Kelvin Banks could go within the first 10 spaces, and that run, as we kind of postulated about a little bit last week, could happen to where it might be necessary if you have a specific high character kind of offensive lineman in mind that you want to go up and get. Like, you might have to go up and do that with the draft capital that you have available to you.
Well, there are a couple things that would feed into, you know, this happening. Number one, the Texans are in a position where they can be very specific about the player that they want. You know, this is the defense is pretty much set, as we know. The offense has just a couple of holes here and there. So they need to they're in a position where they're in win now, as we often say, and they can specifically target one player. That means you can give up some draft capital to get that one player. That's the first thing that kind of feeds into the Texans perhaps moving up. And then there's the Nick Caserio factor. Like, if you are, you know, Sean Pendergast, like, power ranking general managers most likely to just move on the first day of the draft, Nick Caserio is top three. You know, he's had 18 draft trades since he's been here in 2021.
A lot of trades. Not all of them up, mind you, but a lot of them.
No, not
all sorts
up.
Of different places.
But,
yeah.
but he likes to trade.
He loves to trade. I mean, he's top three, top five candidate in terms of. So the fact that they can pretty much, you know, go target practicing, you know, they can go specific to one player, and that he loves to do this, it feeds directly into that. Now, it's easy to say lying season, all that. I laughed at Seth's tweet this morning. So you're telling me, and I'm paraphrasing, but he pretty much said, so you're telling me they might trade up or they might trade back. yeah, I get
that's
that.
Right.
I get that. But really, when it comes to this team and Caserio specifically, I think the odds are higher that happens. So
that they trade up.
Yeah, and they can target a guy.
Yeah. And one of the things that I do also find interesting within that is if they were to actually trade up, as it seems like, and I do wonder how much of this is also just Nick Caserio with his willingness to trade is keeping an eye on all of the costs, whether it's up or down, and maybe it's not specifically that he's absolutely going to trade up. But if you are looking to trade up, I know people have the particular players that they would like to trade up for. The idea of Tyler Booker, right, who at Alabama.
Or Banks.
Especially if you're talking about character. Mm-hmm. Kelvin Banks Jr. is absolutely one of those guys also in that vein of if you're talking about character and then in the offensive line. Are you willing to overpay? Mm-hmm. Because, and this is the thing that's tough because it's draft day and you'll get our draft time and you get all sorts of reporting. But at one point, you're seeing that, hey, you know, it might be a little more costly to move up, especially the number of picks that you have to. I was looking at a really interesting evaluation of what it takes, the trades that have happened in the first round in the past. And when it comes down to it, like, sometimes we think that, you know, a lot of trades do happen in the first round, but often it's a lot smaller gap to jump, right? Usually you're talking about...
Yeah, if you're talking about going up to 10 or 12, that's big. That's big time.
Right. I think that there's only been a very select few instances where you've had teams really jumping like a large distance in order to get picks. Like NFL teams have traded up to take players in the first round 28 times in the past 5 years. And oftentimes that's not necessarily, or I mean, when you talk about making a Pro Bowl, that's a different stat that I have here. But like when it comes to trading up a large number, it's only happened a handful of times. I want to say three. And one of those was the Texans jumping up to get Will Anderson Jr. A few years back. And so the cost might be kind of prohibitive, or it seemed prohibitive, but this team has extra draft capital. And I guess this long way of getting around to, are you comfortable if Nick Caserio, because he isn't comfortable with this kind of generally, are you comfortable if Nick Caserio is quote unquote overpaying to get to that spot to draft a particular player?
Absolutely. And I know a lot of people are sort of bristling about, oh, you don't want to give up too many draft picks. Why? I get the premise, you know, draft picks are valuable, you know, but I'll go back to, you know, is this a rebuilding team or is this a team that needs a couple of pieces to get where they want to go? And I think they're the latter. So to be, if you're the latter, you can absolutely trade a little more capital than you would otherwise. Yeah. So I'd be good with it.
And on top of that, I think Nick Caserio gave us a little bit of game in one way where he was basically, he alluded to the idea you're not going to be able to roster all these guys.
Right.
With, I mean, even with seven picks in this round, in this draft rather, and then having probably, I think, is it seven or eight next year as well? Mm-hmm. But having that many with all the players that you have, I don't know that you're necessarily going to be able to roster all the young talent. Now, I do love the idea of just taking picks and throwing them out there and then getting them into camp and seeing what you have and then building your roster that way. But I can also very much understand the idea that, hey, man, if you know you're not going to be able to roster all these, how about you package some of these together and go get what you absolutely know that you want, especially if the reporting is right that there might be such a run that gets you to that place. Interestingly enough, so the Packers are selecting 23, the Vikings selecting 24. Literally the two teams ahead of you are what people are talking about when it comes to maybe drafting offensive linemen and getting
moving up. Yeah,
if you're moving up over them, that puts like the Chargers there. I have no idea if the Chargers want to trade back. There's teams higher up that probably want to trade back, but then we talk about the cost. The Pittsburgh Steelers have been talked about as a team that probably wants to trade back, but maybe that being a space where teams could trade up for a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do wonder if that would make the cost more prohibitive in that space in particular compared to the other places where I know that there's a market to want to trade back, but those are further up.
But that's where your evaluation of what other teams are really doing comes into play. You know, keep in mind that, you know, every NFL team also has not just their board and their plan and their players. They also sort of speculate on, and Nick Caserio said it on our airwaves, we look at some other mock drafts.
Yeah.
You know, some they take more seriously than others. They also do their own work. If they feel, as has recently been reported, there's only going to be one quarterback taken in the first round, then they'll feel much better about moving higher up in the draft because they're not competing against someone who's going to give so many draft picks because they want a quarterback. So this is where your own research and your own you know, sort of speculation and analysis comes into play. So that wouldn't necessarily scare me off too much because unless here we are on round one, here we are tomorrow night, and there are, you know, you're getting info that so-and-so wants to move up to get a quarterback, then everything changes.
Yeah. 832, I'm not sure how valid these rumors are, but I'm interested in it, right? I think that I am interested in seeing ultimately what happens. But, yeah, it is Lion season to some degree, and there's all sorts of various things in various different directions.
But to less a degree, right?
What do you mean?
Lying season.
As we get closer?
Yeah.
Yeah, some things become a little bit more, I think you imagine you've sussed out more things at this time. But to add ambiguity to all of it, I think Aaron Wilson said that not only have they been looking, the Texans, to trade up, but also they've been kind of gauging trade back. So if that adds...
They might trade up, they might trade back,
that's right.
They might stand pat.
Those are options. All options that are in play here. And if you feel like that told you nothing, exactly. All right, you're in the loop. Here on Sports Radio 610 832, I heard Detroit is putting Jameson Williams on the chopping block. I did see those rumors. We can talk more about that when we go around the NFL.
I think he put those rumors out there
here in a second. But there's a couple of players out there that maybe could be available for a trade that I'm interested in seeing how you feel, John Lopez. But before we get there, let's go to our question of the day, inspired by Mike Patrick, who passed away yesterday, but was the voice that first told us about the first down yellow line, an invention or innovation in sports history. What is the greatest innovation to you in sports history? 713-572-4610. We'll talk about that next. Yep. You are in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Reginald Atula, Figgy Fig, hanging out with you here. Let's get to our question of the day. What is the greatest innovation to you in sports history? 713-572-4610. Because... Mike Patrick, who is a well-renowned, or at least was, right? I feel it's always weird when someone passes.
That
moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mike Patrick passed at the age of 80 yesterday. Good run, right? I think
terrific run.
Good run. 80 is a good run. I think we can judge. And legendary broadcaster. And I think this is where my youth will show because like. He's not one of the ones that immediately comes to mind for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll go through, I guess, a little bit through the Wayback Machine and refresh at least my personal memory of what Mike Patrick's resume is. But one of the ones that in particular that I definitely did not know about was about way back when we first were introduced as a football watching public on ESPN in 1998 to the first and 10 line, the yellow, or at that point he actually called it golden line on the field on the broadcast. And this is how he explained it to America.
Welcome back to Baltimore. To help you better enjoy our Sunday night coverage, ESPN unveils its latest technical innovation on tonight's game. It's ESPN's first and 10. The gold-colored line you'll see appears to be painted on the field, but it's really being electronically generated by us. It's a visual reference for you to always know the yard line an offense has to reach for a first down. While it is accurate to one-tenth of a yard, it won't be used to question officials' marks or measurements. It is purely to help you enjoy and understand
yes,
the game.
Yes, it will.
ESPN's first and 10. We think you're going to like
it. Oh, we love it.
He did. I was like, yo, this is an incredible explanation. He hit all the points. He made sure to
and the pipes.
The tonal quality was very good.
Yeah.
But then he also made sure to know. He's like, I know what question y'all about to ask. No, we will not. They can't see this on the field. We will not talk about
you guys.
Right. Yeah. They will not go like we. The refs will not have any level of a review or what have you based
on
this.
But we sure will and have.
That's right. That's right.
He crossed the yellow line.
One of the things I didn't realize how accurate was on like first when it first was utilized.
Yeah.
What did he say? A tenth of a yard?
A tenth of a yard.
I was like, damn, I didn't realize it was that accurate to begin with. Yeah. So, but shout out to obviously Mike Patrick, but that obviously is what got us to the place of this question of the day. What to you is the greatest innovation in sports history?
That is really high on the
list. That one's strong. I was wondering, how did people even watch the game without the yellow line,
it's
man?
It's funny you asked, Figgy, because Reggie was just talking about, you know, he doesn't even remember, you know, this coming out. It's always been a part of at least of your most of your sports watching life.
Yeah, modern memory.
Which you can remember, yeah.
I'm old enough to remember when they first started putting the down and distance on the screen. Like before that, it was just like, I think it's 3rd and 4, 5, something like that. And then they would put 3rd and 2. I'm like, holy crap, this is awesome. This is awesome. It was so I'm old enough to remember that. But this one is definitely on the, I mean, to this day, you know, it just makes the viewing experience so much better. But I gotta give it up to a texter. I think there's a really strong competitor to this one. And we can certainly talk about a number of different things. I don't have it in front of me, but someone said the strike, the K-box.
Yeah, that you get on television broadcast. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It really is. However, I actually think this is me being a contrarian. I always try and acknowledge when I might be getting into those spaces.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of actually have come to realize where it is becoming a crutch, the K-box.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, just like Mike Patrick explained there, they don't see the K-box or what have you. And until we get automated balls and strikes in baseball, like, it is not the way that this thing is called. And sometimes we be getting out here seeing something in that K-box, and it's like, nope, he didn't call that. And I was able to better visualize the strike zone that the ump was creating when that K-box was not there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that
I still rather have it.
Probably so.
I'd still rather have it.
Probably so, right? I will acknowledge that.
Yeah.
But I think that the K-box actually probably serves to make me more mad than anything.
Oh, for sure. That.
To me, it make you judge the umpire.
Yes.
Like, dog, that was in the box.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you looking
at?
There
were a couple last night in the Astros game where I was like, boy, you're an idiot. How'd you miss that? Okay, so I'm going to go back in the Wayback Machine again, too, here, because these are some, and you can go back as far as you want or as recently as you want. Again, don't judge me. Don't call me an old fogey or anything. I'm just old enough, put it that way. I remember slow motion, man.
That came in on the 979 on the text line, 1960. Slow motion paved the way for everything.
Well,
oh, my goodness.
That's before I was even born, so maybe I just remember it, you know, as a youth marveling at it. But
I just read the text, to
be honest. But yeah, I don't know exactly what year it was, but I was like, ooh, this is amazing. And somebody mentioned this. You can go back as far as you want. The Zamboni for hockey.
Once you get clean ice?
They used to have to do that by hand.
Oh, God.
They used to have to clean the ice between periods by hand.
Yeah. Oof. Best luck to y'all.
Yeah.
Some other ones that came in. Our guy Phoenix Marcus on the YouTube page said, in his house is the three-point line.
Mm-hmm.
Pops made him go shoot from distance. As soon as he's like, hey, we got a new opportunity. There's a new avenue to show your acumen.
Well, something right now, I do like how they show the distance of the three-pointer. Like, I think that might be an ESPN thing, but whenever, like, Steph Curry shoot, it show, like, 25 feet or 26 feet or whatever the feet is. I do kind of like that to kind of show how far it was.
I like that. but I hate, sorry, Reggie, hit probability. What the bleep are we doing here?
In basketball?
Or I think baseball. It's baseball.
I think
baseball.
It's good okay. context.
It is awful.
I think it's great context.
It doesn't, like, there was one last night on that terrific catch that Jeremy Pena
yeah.
made. Oh, well, you know, I guess it was, who was in right field? Was it Cam? Yeah, Cam had 75% catch probability on that. And I'm like, he didn't even catch it. Jeremy Pena caught it. I mean, so does you know? Does it go against Cam? Did he miss that ball? It's stupid.
I think it just it helps you contextualize the situation. We're like, because sometimes, and we can acknowledge this. There's sometimes that it looks like, oh man, that was an easy ball to get to, and you talk to the people that know, and they're like, actually, no, that is a lot more difficult than you give it credit for. And I think that it serves to open this thing up a little bit more to us casuals. And I say that obviously tongue in cheek, but to us that are like not actually doing this at that high of level as to, okay, no, this is a more difficult situation than probably meets the eye. And that's one of the things that's incredible about sports is that they make the easy stuff or the difficult stuff look easy. And sometimes I need you to help me bring that back into the, you know, proper context of, oh no, that actually is really hard.
It's stupid.
How y'all speaking of that, how y'all feel about when they do the, like, I guess the probable of, if you down 1-2 in the count.
Oh, win probability?
Yeah. Like
no, the probability of getting a hit. Like I
thought you meant win probability.
Apple TV
is fun.
Does this a lot. Yeah. Apple TV does this a lot where
it's like down 1-2. He got a 10% chance of getting on base or getting a hit or something like that. How y'all feel about that?
To me, that's a bit much. That's in the same realm as you know, probability.
I'll be kind of hate watching a little bit. Like, I want to see how wrong this becomes. This dude going to hit a home run of 1-2.
But I do like win probability. That's always fun to see those lines, you know, like on a big comeback or something.
He's like, stop telling me numbers. Give me graphs that my eyes look at. Some other ones that came in, photo finish and horse racing. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
How about the remote control? Somebody
someone did say the remote control, because back in the day,
I would have to sit.
As a child, you are the remote control. No, if you don't get up and change that.
You're talking to one.
Yeah.
My dad would put me right in front of the TV. Okay, put it on 7. Put it on 4. I was like,
oh. You were red zone back in the day. Hey, flip over.
This one is a little nerdy. This is shout out to all the, I guess, the marketing and sales people. But whenever you notice when you're watching a basketball game and how on the floor it say like HEB or it say Mulcairn Law or something like that. Like, that's not actually on the floor.
Correct.
Yeah.
At one point, you have to put that stuff on the floor.
Yeah.
I kind of like that a little bit, man. Mm-hmm. I feel like they could, like I said, I sound like a salesperson.
Yeah, I was like, I'm sorry, I don't care that much. Good for them that they can up the money, but that don't do much for me personally.
Yeah, no, I kind of like that because at one point, you had to put it on the floor. You had to put it on the
grounds crew. You're saving the grounds crew some headaches.
Yeah, now anybody could get their name on that floor.
But what is nice about that, particularly in basketball, is that I've seen like TNT utilize that to put actually put some of the information that would be in that box on, you know, on the side on the field. So your eyes can stay a little bit closer to the action. I think that's kind of been an interesting continuation. Some people mentioned it. 713. Don't forget the golf tracer. Huge.
Oh yes.
Huge. Cause sometimes trying to watch that, see that golf ball, especially on an overcast day.
Hey, how about Rory shot?
How the hell am I supposed to see where that is?
How about Rory shot the curved around?
Yeah. You get a so much better understanding what's happening. Yes. 832, the Fox box changed basketball for sure. Basketball shot clock. Huge. Huge.
That's a big one.
Taking the game into a place where, hey, we have some pace, we have some urgency, as opposed to the time wasting that can happen. Somebody said the challenge flag. That's an interesting one as well. For me, one of the ones that I actually thought about, because it comes to another legendary broadcaster, as again, we're saluting Mike Patrick in this instance, was the Telstrator.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
being yeah, able to good, being able one. To bring, because that's one thing about these broadcasts, is that when you have that analyst there, they're supposed to be able to bring the game a little bit more, make it more accessible. And it's one thing to have the visual and then being able to talk through it. It's another thing to be able to like diagram on top of it. And I think that it made us as a football watching public so much smarter.
Let me ask
being
you
able
this.
To actually draw onto that 100%. Onto that game.
Let me ask you this. A year from now, 5 years from now, are we going to be saying that the electronic first down is the greatest? I think maybe.
It'll be helpful.
I think maybe.
It'll be hugely helpful. Because someone else was talking about the Hawkeye technology in tennis, and I think that was great. But I think I do want. I don't know how much time it'll save ultimately, but I think maybe that's time
accuracy.
Savings. But
yeah,
that'll absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder how much the innovations as we continue to go, because a lot of the ones that we were talked about were kind of far back.
Mm-hmm.
How much like innovations as we continue to go become less and less? They feel less and less big because of all the technology that we're used to.
This is true.
You know,
or you just expect it. You know,
and shout out. Shout out to the 713, reiterating one that Sean said earlier. Red zone. Like an ability to keep track with a lot of games in a way that we hadn't prior. So, yeah, red zone has been huge as well. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we can circle back to some of the interesting audio calls of Mike Patrick's career, that because some of them tie back to Houston as well. But also, it's line season, and there's more and more intel dropping about all sorts of teams. We'll dig into some of that as we go around the NFL next.